On today's BizNews briefing, Donald Trump issues Russia with a 50-day ultimatum while arming Ukraine. R.W. Johnson on Trump, trade, and BEE. Bitcoin hits new highs. NVIDIA gets green light to China. And Neil De Beer with a message for all South Africans. Stay tuned. It's Tuesday, the 15th of July. This is your BizNews briefing. I'm Stuart Lohmann. US President Donald Trump has issued a fresh warning to Russia, ready to impose so-called secondary tariffs of around 100%, unless a new deal with Ukraine is reached within the next 50 days.
One of the reasons that you're here today is to hear that we are very unhappy, I am, with Russia. But we'll discuss that maybe a different day. But we're very, very unhappy with them, and we're going to be doing very severe tariffs if we don't have a deal in 50 days. Tariffs at about 100%. You'd call them secondary tariffs. You know what that means. But today we're going to talk about something else. And as you know, we've spent $350 billion approximately on this war with Russia and Ukraine, and would like to see it end. It wasn't my war. It was Biden's war. It's not my war. I'm trying to get you out of it. And we want to see it end. And I'm disappointed in President Putin because I thought we would have had a deal 2 months ago, but it doesn't seem to get there. So based on that, we're going to be doing secondary tariffs if we don't have a deal in 50 days. It's very simple. And they'll be at 100%. And that's the way it is. That can be more simple. It's just the way it is. I hope we don't have to do it.
That threat against Russia came alongside a pledge of further support for Ukraine. Trump says the United States will send top-of-the-line weapons, but that NATO countries will be expected to pay for the military support.
We've made a deal today, and I'm going to have Mark speak about it, but we've made a deal today where we are going to be sending them weapons and they're going to be paying for them. The United States will not be having any payment made. We're not buying it, but we will manufacture it and they're going to be paying for it. Our last meeting of a month ago was very successful in that they agreed to 5%, which is more than $1 trillion a year. So they have a lot of money. And these are wealthy nations. They have a lot of money and they want to do it. They feel very strongly about it. And we feel strongly about it, too. But we're in for a lot of money and we don't want to do anymore. And we can't. But we make the best and we're going to be sending the best to NATO and in some cases to maybe at Mark's suggestion, if we go to Germany where they're going to send early on missiles, and they'll be replaced, and NATO is going to take care of it. It's going to be coordinated by NATO, and they're going to work very much with Matt Whitaker, who's right here. He's a great ambassador, and Matt's going to be coordinating. You better do a good job, Matt.
I will.
But Matt's going to coordinate. He's a very talented guy. He's going to coordinate everything. So in a nutshell, we're going to make top-of-the-line weapons, and they'll be sent to NATO. NATO may choose to have certain of them sent to other countries where we can get a little additional speed, where the country will release something and it'll be mostly in the form of a replacement. This is a very big deal we've made. This is billions of dollars worth of military equipment is going to be purchased from the United States, going to NATO, etc. And that's going to be quickly distributed to the battlefield. Ukraine will take it up. And, you know, say what you want about Ukraine. When the war started, they had no chance, and they still would have had no chance if the equipment they had the best equipment, because we do make the best planes and missiles, and we make the best military equipment in the world by far. And we have new things coming out that are beyond belief, and I'm very excited about the Golden Dome. It's going to give us very strong protection.
BizNews columnist R.W. Johnson says Trump's demand to exempt U.S. firms from local BEE laws has exposed the policy's deep economic and moral contradictions. He likens it to a self-defeating version of apartheid for the investment era. Let's take a listen.
The Trumpist stipulation about BEE creates all sorts of major complications. The ANC regards the BEE laws as holy writ, but it would be extremely ill-advised simply to ignore the demand. Many U.S. companies are already in South Africa, and most will have already been forced to comply with BEE laws. So do these decisions need to be reversed? If so, What is the moral for local companies or companies from Japan, the EU, the UK, and elsewhere? And in the case of new entrants like Starlink, will the ban on BEE extend to equity equivalent schemes? After all, their impact will be much the same. In either case, a new entrant to the South African scene has to pay all manner of extra costs unrelated to its business functions in order to be allowed the privilege of operating in South Africa. So the disincentive to investment here remains the same. And, after all, no other African country imposes penalties of this sort on foreign investors. And at the end of the day, there is the same dreary result of a country starved of foreign investment, setting out obstacles to further foreign investment, encouraging investors to stay away. The spluttering and self-righteous defense of BEE by Ramaphosa and the Black Business Council cannot disguise the fact that this is deeply irrational and self-harming. However, the damage is not merely economic. Partly as a result of the fuss over Starlink and Elon Musk, the whole issue of South Africa's racial laws has received wide international attention. This is humiliating for the ANC, which still lacks to boast that it is building a non-racist, non-sexist South Africa, and which has been happily celebrating the 70th anniversary of the Freedom Charter with its similar insistence on non-racialism and on a South Africa which belongs to all who live in it, black or white. South Africa used to attract a great deal of international opprobrium because of its apartheid racial laws, but those are supposed to be the bad old days. So the first indignant ANC response is a straightforward denial that we have any racial laws. Instead, we have redress. But this simply won't wash. The Institute of Race Relations has counted up our racial laws, and there are 142 of them. As Elon Musk has pointed out, even though he was born in South Africa, his investment here would not be welcomed unless he complies with BEE racial laws. Musk is obviously also correct when he insists that he would not be subject to these laws if he were black. One sense is that, as with apartheid, the fight to defend BEE is a defensive battle which the ANC is bound to lose in the end because BEE is, like apartheid, ultimately a parochial policy preference which is at odds with the rationale of the international market economy. From the outset, BEE was a much easier sell back home in South Africa, where it was not difficult to find white businessmen eager to ingratiate themselves with the new ANC governments and happy to be quoted as saying that BEE was both desirable and necessary. Yet international investors have never been quoted as saying such a thing. Typically, they said nothing but just stayed away. When pressed by those who conducted surveys on the subject, they naturally said BEE was the number one reason to steer clear of South Africa. The difference was that local investors were already here and had to make the best of that situation, while international investors had a free choice. As may be seen, the Trumpist attempts to veto BEE legislation, at least insofar as American firms are concerned, is thus merely putting into words the already heavy pressure against this policy exerted by market forces. In effect, once BEE was introduced, international capital mainly went on strike against the policy. Nobody spelt it out, but in effect, market forces declared that if you persevere with this policy, you will suffer a huge drop in foreign investment and at least some reduction in domestic investment. This will cost you many jobs, and thus a major source of political capital. Despite that, the ANC has plowed on with this hopeless policy. Sure enough, none of Ramaphosa's investment summits have come to anything, and the enormous loss of jobs has cost the ANC its majority. Despite that, Ramaphosa insists that he will carry on with this policy. In part, this is doubtless because he is the most successful BEE mascot there has ever been, but it is also a sign of his, and the ANC's, complete ignorance of economic matters. Moreover, the more the ANC vote shrinks, the more dependent it is on subsidies from BEE beneficiaries. So the party is trapped in a downward spiral. Between August 2022 and October 2024, ANC membership fell from 691,381 to 494,146, a reduction of almost a third. And all this is true despite polls showing that BEE is unpopular with both black and white voters.
You can read R.W. Johnson's contributions on biznews.com, or you can listen to them on BizNews TV on YouTube.
Like a soapy breakup scene, selling your car can be an emotional experience. Just how dramatic was the car selling experience?
Not dramatic at all. I did my research and We Buy Cars was by far the best price.
Very not dramatic. But I like drama.
I was standing there watching my phone, waiting for the money to get in, and there it was.
Yes. Car, driving.
We Buy Cars. The easiest way to sell your car, by far.
I wouldn't mind a little more drama. Anybody bring me some tears?
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Right now, you can get the cheapest Forex rate around, right here, on Shift. Pay less for your dollars, pounds, and euros here. And get to shop more here. And do more here. And enjoy more ooh-la-la here. Shift also lets you trade and transfer currencies and buy shares in the world's best companies. It all happens right here on Shift. You won't find a cheaper Forex rate anywhere else, no matter where you bank. Download the Shift app today.
In international markets, NVIDIA has been given the green light to restart its H20 chip export to China. This was confirmed by US government officials as NVIDIA posted about it on its blog. Bloomberg reports.
What more do we know about this NVIDIA announcement and what it tells us about the Trump administration's thinking on export controls?
Well, I think it's interesting that it was NVIDIA who announced this, not the White House. I'll get to that and what that means in a little bit. But essentially, this is a great victory for CEO of NVIDIA, Jensen Huang, who, by the way, is in Beijing right now, just appeared on state television. And we learned of this development on the H20 chip through a blog post from NVIDIA, essentially saying that they've been given tacit approval by the White House to apply for those export licenses for the H20 chips to be sold to China. And he expects, Jensen Huang and NVIDIA all expect, that those license applications to be approved and the H20 chips can resume being sold to China. Jensen Huang has been an outspoken critic of these export controls from the United States, saying they haven't worked and also they've given competitors in China like Huawei an unfair advantage. In fact, NVIDIA projected they could lose about $8 billion in sales in this current quarter just because of those export controls. They'd also been working on a new chip based on Blackwell architecture to comply with those Trump trade curbs. But now, if the H20 is going to resume sales to China, it would be an interesting development, obviously, and a very fortuitous one for NVIDIA to have two potential chips. Yes, they're scaled back from the most advanced AI chips from NVIDIA, but still, having chips that are compliant with U.S. export controls allowed to go into China is a big development, not only for NVIDIA, but for U.S.-China relations, no doubt.
Well, on that point, Stephen, what is your assessment of what this tells us about those conversations, the trade tensions that we know exist between the two sides that on some level have eased to some extent? What does this reflect when it comes to those trade negotiations?
Well, it tells us a lot about what Jensen Huang and Donald Trump spoke about in the White House last week, and also why Jensen Huang is in Beijing right now with meetings with the commerce minister as well as their trade negotiator, He Lifeng. So obviously he's the one that has lobbied the White House, gaining that approval for the export licenses, and he's the one to take that message essentially to China. What it tells me about the backroom bargaining in the trade deal and the trade truce that was reaffirmed in London is that the United States clearly wants China to speed up its export licensing process for rare earth minerals as well as rare earth magnets. And what does China want? They want a relaxation of those tight export controls on advanced chips. It seems as though this was win-win for the two countries as they try and bridge their differences. And this was maybe for Donald Trump, as he met with Jensen Huang, a little bit of a low-hanging fruit and was convinced that they're doing the United States tech companies' competitive advantage more harm than good.
Bitcoin surged to new highs yesterday as U.S. lawmakers vote on pro-crypto legislation. Our partners at the Financial Times report.
It feels like the cryptocurrency sector is making unprecedented strides right now. Bitcoin hit a record high yesterday. It went north of $122,000. And this is happening as lawmakers in U.S. Congress are set to vote on a series of crypto bills. We have the FT's digital markets correspondent, Nico Asghari, here to talk more about it. Tell me about the legislation that's got investors so excited about Bitcoin.
So there's three pieces of legislation that are being debated this week in Washington. And all three of them, in one way or another, are helping to bring different parts of crypto more in line with traditional finance and to give rules that will give confidence to investors and to companies to use them. So, for example, there is the Digital Asset Market Clarity Act, and this is really sort of a market structure bill. And if this is passed, it will help companies, both traditional and crypto, hold and trade and create their own stable coins much more comfortably than they perhaps are at the moment. And the third one is the Anti-Central Bank Digital Currency Surveillance State Act, which really aims to stop the US Federal Reserve from creating its own digital currency. And in doing that, will give a lot of power to private stablecoin and private currencies that, you know, exist and make up the majority, if not all, of the market at the moment.
Bitcoin wasn't doing so hot for a while, Niku. I mean, how did it make this rise to the top?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just a few years ago, when Sam Bankman-Fried's crypto exchange FTX collapsed, it sent the price of Bitcoin down to as low as about $16,000. Since then, it's been on a sort of upward recovery. But really, the kicker was when Donald Trump won the election in November and returned to the White House. That has sent the price of Bitcoin rising, because not only is he, his family, a lot of people in Washington, in the cabinet, really pro-crypto, but they've also sort of helped crypto become more mainstream. They've stopped a whole bunch of lawsuits against the biggest crypto companies you can think of. They replaced the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission, who was previously pretty anti-crypto, with someone who's pretty friendly towards crypto. And now this week, these new bills that are expected to pass all signal just this change in sentiment towards crypto, which has helped the price of Bitcoin rise so much.
They're not just pro-crypto, the Trump administration, but the Trump family is also involved in crypto.
Yeah, absolutely. Trump and his wife Melania have their own meme coins, which are just tokens that you can buy and trade like any other. Trump and his sons also run and promote this company called World Liberty Financial, which again has its own stablecoin and another coin that they're set to launch. So they're making a lot of money also from the industry that the president himself is promoting.
Regular BizNews viewers will know Neil DeBeer from The Sunday Show. And speaking to Colonel Chris White, he says South Africans must not wait on politicians to fix the country. Real change will come from the streets.
We have, as a country, risen many times. We've had opportunities in this country to fail again. We've had many moments in this country's history where we could have had more than just a fight in parliament, but a fight in the streets. But there's one thing I'll tell every South African every day. When it comes and the chips are down, I believe that this country will unify, no matter the racial belt. We see it in stadiums. We see it out there where we can unite. If we are going to wait for the politicians in this country to change this country, it's not going to change. It will have to come from the civil streets. Like, you know, we are sitting on a powder keg and we think it's just the white people in this country that's had enough. I'm telling you straight, everybody's had enough. So we must get the word out there. And if we are a rainbow nation, live it, be it. If someone throws a paper on the ground in front of you, tell them this is unacceptable. Laws are made by us, in actual fact. Ons moenie opgee nie, ons moet aanhou totdat daai dag kom. I am now more dangerous than I have ever been in my life before, because my lifetime, Chris, on Mother Earth is not going to be based on the matter of longevity. It's going to be based on God's faith and His right for me to live. But I can tell you now, we lack leadership in this country. We lack leadership that has backbone. And we lack people that will get up and tell to their face, thus far, and no more. So this country has power, and it has power in its citizenry. We will never allow people like you to walk away from us, lose the interest in us, Chris. You are also a huge ambassador of this country, even if you are treated in various ways on a very wrong way. We will not allow it. We will not allow this country to go to the dogs until dogs end. We are close. Next year, we have the opportunity to muster as much support as what we can and take them out of the metros. That will be the first step. So that's my blessing to the country. It is to say, we're tougher than this, and we should see it out.
Neil is expected back this Sunday on BizNews TV. And that's it for today's BizNews briefing. We'll return tomorrow with more context on both global and local events. A big thanks to the BizNews production team. From me, Stuart Lohman. Until then.